You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Look like a little country. Some rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing for good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
Welcome to Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features discussions with and the music of local musicians. I am your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with Henry Jones about his life, his music, and his performance coming up in 2 weeks from Friday at the First Friday for Folk Music Concert on Friday, September 5th at the First Presbyterian Church, Stewart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue, with two sets beginning at 7:30 p.m. Welcome back to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Henry Jones.
Hey, thank you very much, Dave. Happy to be on with you.
Well, why don't we talk a little bit about your background? Tell us about your musical journey. How did you get involved in music?
Well, got lucky enough to have music-loving parents. When I grew up, they had the big console stereos with the big speakers. So that was always playing, seemingly, you know, especially on the weekends. You get up in the morning and mom's got Sam Cooke playing or Ike and Tina's playing, or my dad's always got a Bill Withers going. I don't know what they paid for that stereo, but they was getting the money out of it. And then at one point, they would have these house parties, and they would bring all people in, and people would come and dance, and they had hired a DJ, and he had these big milk crates full of albums, and he would come and he would set his speaker system up and he would play music and all the people would come and I'd fall asleep and they'd be out there dancing. Or as a little kid, you know, you kind of sneak behind the couch and try to watch the grown-ups having fun. And, well, one time they had this, but once the man brought the milk crates and he didn't take them with him, and then he didn't come back. So they asked around. Apparently he'd gotten into some trouble or something, but he never did come get his records back. This is up near Cincinnati, Ohio, and get a bunch of snow in the winters. So as kids, we start investigating what's in this milk crate. You know, you pick a record up, Johnny Cash, Live at Folsom Prison with it. And I'm thinking the man, he did a lot of different DJ gigs, so he had a lot of different types of music in his collection. So we go through there and we, Waylon Jennings, who is this? Tom T. Hall, what is that all about? And just investigating this massive collection that got left at our house, I think that just cultivated a lot of different interest in music.
And when did you pick up the guitar?
Well, so I'm listening to music, music always playing, and then somewhere around 17 or so, my sister, my older sister, left me a vehicle, but it wasn't running. This wasn't a very good vehicle, and I wanted a guitar. And my mother said, well, you know, you do whatever you want with that car. So I put an ad in a little paper, asked, but I sold it. And when they gave me the money, I had money for a guitar. So me and my buddy, he's going to be a drummer. He had a little drum set. So we got on the bus downtown, and we didn't have the money for a proper retail music store, so we went to a pawn shop and picked around in this pawn shop and tried to make a deal with the guy, and he gave me this terrible guitar and a little amplifier. Bought this setup, went back to my friend's house, started making noise from there and trying to figure things out. Try to listen to people, learn a bit. You meet another player and he'll show you a little bit, and it just kind of took off from there.
So you're totally self-taught on the guitar.
Okay, so for a lot of years, I was self-taught. And then when the internet got good, there was a guy out in California that did some online lessons. And he'd make a lesson and then give you the PDF and show you. So many years later, I started trying to pick up lessons from people. Thank goodness for the internet. There's some good folks out there. This gentleman, he had a setup where he could download the lesson. But that was, you know, I've been playing many years before I got figured that out. I admire some of these kids coming up, man. It's like, if you want to learn something, it's all over the place. When my sons were growing up and they were learning how to play, they'd ask me some stuff and I'd show them a little bit, and then they'd get on the YouTube there and they'd have it figured out by the end of the afternoon. The struggle that I had as a player had a lot more struggle. Maybe it's worth more if you have to struggle more, but it was a lot more difficult than just clicking on YouTube and having a guy. I mean, these guys have split screens showing this is your left hand finger and here's your right hand finger, and then they'll slow the I crouched over a record player there for a while trying to catch the needle and put it back. Kind of had to do it the hard way there for a while.
What are some of the guitar skills that you found to be the most difficult?
There were certain sounds that I would like from different players. And there's your standard tuning, the standard way to tune a guitar, that 85-90% of the guitars are tuned to a standard way to tune it. The music that I was really getting into my head wasn't using a standard tuning. So the most difficult thing for me, I'm hearing this sound that I really enjoy and I'm really attracted to, but I can't make my guitar sound like that. So to get into the open tuning and the alternate tuning universe was probably the biggest thing to try to get your ear adjusted, because you're hearing something and your guitar is never going to make that sound until you get it tuned into that open tune until you. So that was probably the most difficult, was to try to figure out the tunings that were going to get me the sounds that I was admiring, I was hearing, but I couldn't get there until I got the tuning puzzle kind of unlocked. And then as I started going into it deeper, I could manipulate it to get what I wanted out of it personally. That was probably the biggest kind of hurdle to get where I wanted to go.
Why do you think people went to non-standard tuning?
I think a lot of it, people were experimenting. I was listening to some Richard Thompson and Chris Whitley. Those were kind of more modern players that were doing alternate tunings. But then you go back. Now, I've heard stories that it goes back to World War I, where people were over in Europe and guys were hearing tunings over there. They were using what was called a Spanish tuning over there, or a Vestapool, I guess is what they call it. They were hearing a different guitar tuning over there than what we were using. They picked it up over there, brought it back, and kind of suited it to fit the purposes of what they wanted. But I think that might be, you know, your ear hears it different. It strikes your ear a little bit differently. And, you know, I think that's what kind of drew players into wanting to mess with them.
So it sounds like you grew up in Ohio.
Yeah, I did. We were mainly in Ohio. We had a lot of other spots going on, but we were mainly in Ohio.
And how did you get back here to the South?
I had been in Ohio, had been dealing with the winters, and at some point, as a young man, you're going to want to see what's out there. I've seen everything I need to see about the Midwest. I need to go. And so at that point, young and married and a couple of real little kids, it's like, hey, we're going to Texas. It's just going to be a big adventure, and up we went. And from there, we just pretty much stayed in the South ever since.
And you lived in Savannah here for a while.
I did. Oh, Savannah. Savannah, what a beautiful town. What a beautiful town. Probably the most beautiful town I've ever lived in. I've been in several. Man, Savannah was just a gorgeous town and a lot of great folks. I really kind of miss it, really, to tell you the truth.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, we have blues guitarist Henry Jones. Let's talk about the music scene, your involvement in music as you were in your travels. So okay. You picked up the guitar when you were a teenager. started playing? And then when you were moving, how easy was it to sort of pick up in that area with other players?
Feels like music makes it easier to connect with people. People would ask me, well, you know, if you move, you got to figure out a new town or whatever. And it's almost like, well, a lot of places you move somewhere, there's a good chance that they have something. People like music no matter where you go. So the music has probably helped the transient moving around, because each town you go into, you start looking in where the live music plays and you meet different players and you watch different folks. You want to get in the mix. You say, well, I could play a little bass for this guy, or I might play some guitar over here with this guy, or this guy might come over and play with me on this thing. You just kind of throw your name in the mix wherever you end up. It kind of helps get you into the system, and all of a sudden you know a lot of people, because music kind of pulls you into that. Music has helped bring you into a community. I don't know how it works for other things, but it seems like music makes it much easier.
Well, now Savannah has several different ways you can be in music. Of course, there's the bars down on River Street and right. A few other spots around town. But they also have a lot of open mics, and there's some just casual get-togethers where people will pick a night, like a Tuesday night, and just get together and play music together. Do you see that in other places?
Savannah has probably one of the best scenes I've seen, and I've been in a lot of cities. And Savannah really has the best mix probably out of all the ones I've seen, because Savannah has the touristy base of music where you have the reflow of people. So like you say, you get the River Street mix, but then Savannah actually has more of an artistic venues that are geared more for original music. Because as a musician, we're always wrestling with art versus commerce. At one point, you know, you have some artistic originally things that you're trying to get out there, but then you have on the commercial side of it, you've got folks, hey, they just want to have a good time. They want to dance. They want to hear something familiar. Savannah has a really good mix of that, because you have some of your coffee shops that are geared more for original music. You've got Tybee Island. You could go down there Friday night and bang it out. So Savannah's scene is probably one of the best I've seen. Because there are other places that have the touristy bent, have big crowds and have a lot of cover bands, but then at the same time, they struggle with having, say, music just being played for the sake of music. You have your get-togethers, you got your drum circles in Forsyth Park, you've got your Tuesday nights, the coffee shop where everybody plays, and they bring all sorts of music down there. You have your open mics. Jacksonville, just going to pick on them for just a second. I love you, Jacksonville, but it's a little bit more different there because they don't have the open mics as much. They don't have the more artistic venues. Say the First Friday Folk thing is not something that a lot of other cities have. So Savannah has more of the whole picture as far as music goes.
Now, when I think of Henry Jones, I think of the blues.
Yeah.
And how did you get into the blues?
I learned a lot of different songs and a lot of different music, but I think it always comes back to the blues. And then I was playing some stuff. They weren't blues songs. They were just regular rock and pop songs. But people would say, wow, that you put so much feel into that, or that has a lot of soul. And so I felt like no matter what you were playing, it had an undercurrent of blues in it. And so that's kind of, it's just a part of who I am. So I felt like it was going to be a part of everything I did. And the reason I think that was because the blues, the biggest part of it is the expression part of it. The notes need to mean something. You need to try to make some sort of feeling connection with the player and the people that are listening to it. And the first and foremost, I would want to see music when I first started playing. And I wasn't old enough to get into a bar, but they have a lax attitude for it back in. And my mother would call the establishment and she'd say, hey, you know, I got a 17-year-old. He wanted to see the band tonight. And the club owner would say, bring him down, introduce him to the bartender, and we'll pick him out a spot. And he need to sit right there, and we'll let him sit. And I go down every week and watch these bands play. And what I would see was how they would get into a song and they could pull the whole audience into that song. Now, obviously, it doesn't happen every song, but at certain times they would be playing a song with so much emotion and so much feeling that they could pull that crowd into that moment. I would notice that with other music, but not as much as with the blues. I could see a blues performer, B.B. King, I went and saw him, Bobby Blue Bland. I would see these guys just grab that audience right here and pull them in for a moment. That's what I wanted to do. I saw Buddy Guy at a place, and he captured the entire room. He had every soul in the place for a minute. They all were kind of just grooving with Buddy on something. And that was what the blues did that I didn't see anywhere else. And that's what I started chasing. Now, that has a love-hate relationship with the blues, because I love the emotion and I love the feeling and I love the connection, but I did not and do not always love the patterns that go with it, because the pattern of the music, it was, I learned them, but then I purposely tried to avoid them. So I learned kind of the rules of how the songs are supposed to work. And then at times I would purposely try to get out of it because I just felt like there was too much of the same thing. So it was a love-hate kind of thing. On one hand, I loved the music and appreciate it. And then the other hand, I was kind of fighting against it. That's going to bring you problems because it's so ingrained, it's everywhere in our background, in our music commercials, in our TV. These patterns are locked into our brain as to how this is supposed to go. So you can only color it or bury it so much, and then people are going to look at you like, wait a minute, what are you doing? And so the creative side here is going to want to do things, and then the old school side that's seeking the connection with the music. So you're trying to capture this, but you're trying to put your own spin on it. And so that's going to be a constant kind of push-pull. If you say blues to a lot of people, they're going to think Mustang Sally and a bar band. And at the same time, as well, I appreciate that. You know, I like to have a good time too, but yours is constant fight because you believe the music can be a lot more than that. And over the years, I think it's kind of been beat into this little hole, and it can be kind of tough.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, we have blues guitarist Henry Jones. But even looking at your email address, I won't give it away, but you have old school in your email address.
I do.
And so that seems to be really important to you.
It is. It's very, very important to me. And I think I see the old school guys in a different way, like Blind Willie McTell out of Augusta, Georgia. So when you mention his name, he's considered a blues player. He actually wrote Statesboro Blues. That's the original version of it. He performed it on a 12-string guitar, and it's an amazing song. Blind Willie could play anything, though. If it was swing tunes, if it was pop tunes for whatever day he was in, Blind Willie was playing all of that stuff, but he would only be paid to play blues music. He was a complete musician. He could do all of these really incredible things on a guitar, but he could only get a paycheck if he was playing blues. So he played blues, and that's what he got to be known as. I really try to market a lot of what I'm doing as older, as vintage, as old-fashioned sounding, because I write and play my own music. But I have to be careful with the blues moniker. I say old school because it's a look back at the past with a lot of what we do, but I'm careful with how I attach blues to things. a lot of the newer music, and I like a lot of it, but it's a lot of it's done with computers and a lot of it's with sequencing, and there's a lot of modern things that get done with the music. But I consider myself old school because I just sit down with a guitar and I stomp my foot and I play the doggone thing. Versus maybe the more modern sounds. When I was playing in Savannah, I would go down Congress. So I'm playing on Congress. I've got a couple different gigs down there. So, you know, I'm not a young guy. And you see a lot of the young guys playing down there. And at first, there was a little bit of pressure because a lot of the young guys playing Ed Sheeran. They're playing Ed Sheeran, and they're playing that type of music, and they sound really great doing it. And I started trying to figure out gigs, and I was like, it doesn't make sense for me to try to play Ed Sheeran. I love Ed Sheeran. I think he's killer, but it doesn't make sense for me to try to jump into something. It's like somebody trying to dress much younger than they are. It doesn't really make sense for me to try to do that. I'm from the old school. I like old sounding stuff. Sam Cooke and, like I say, Bill Withers and Robert Johnson. And I started to worry about it, but then I actually was doing well getting gigs. Just I relate more to older music. So instead of trying to play a young man's game, I'll just go backwards. And I've sat up in Savannah. I played some songs from the 1920s. There was an old Nat King Cole tune called Sweet Lorraine that he recorded it in the 50s, but it was actually written in 1928. I had that song in my set, and it went really well. And I started to notice if you can play really good songs and try to play them as best you can, people respond to that. So it was like, okay, so I'm not going to try to redo Beyonce and try to play a Beyonce tune on my guitar. That's kind of funny and stuff. That's like, I'm not going to chase after that. I'm going to go backwards. If I go backwards 50, 70 years and pull material from that, play it as best I can, and it seems to work well. So I'll do old school stuff.
But you put your own spin on it.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And there's some language issues, too. I mean, I like a lot of old blues. I like a lot of Charlie Patton and, like I say, Robert Johnson and Blind Willie Tell and Blind Willie Johnson. And I like a lot of that stuff. But there's a cultural thing where there's things that were said back in the day. You don't say that now. There is no way in the world I'm going to get up there and sing a line like I'm going to beat my woman until I get satisfied. I ain't happening. So I take some of the older things, but I give myself the license to edit where necessary. There are some of the older things that it's like, yeah, no, I don't even think that's legal to say that.
Yeah, things have changed. And these were played in a very different environment than they're played in now.
We are different people, thank God. We are different people now. And so I'll rotate it to where we are now, try to keep some of the old feel to it. But I'm not going to sing about shooting someone or stabbing somebody or beating a female or any of that, which is strange enough because we still have a lot of those elements in modern music, but not going into that.
So right now you live in Mississippi.
Yes, I am in beautiful Tupelo, Mississippi.
Which has a rich musical history.
It does. Yes, it does.
And so how do you interact with that musical history now?
Well, I got here pre-COVID. It was really nice when I got here because it's a smaller town. It's not that big a town, but it has some satellite towns around it. And it had a little bit of a music scene, and there were some clubs where you could go in, and for a smaller area, they will allow you to be independent. So they were kind of letting you do your own thing, and it's because it's not that big of an area, so hey, we want to see something different. So it was a really good thing, and now it's kind of hard to judge things because of COVID. It's hard for me to really get a handle on what this scene would be or should be because COVID really shut it down. I had four regular gigs here in the town. Three of them are closed, and one of them's not doing music because they're only open part-time basis and stuff like that. So I don't have a good grasp on the scene because of what COVID did to the town. There was places here where you Friday, Saturday night, they're packed. I mean, you cannot get another individual in. People will support music here. They go out and they support music here, provided there's not a killer pandemic going on. But as far as it looked promising when I got here.
I know here in Savannah, a lot of places have gone to outdoor venues. If they have a big porch, they'll try to set something up there. A lot of places have closed down some of their parking lots and put tents out.
Yeah.
So have you seen anything like that there?
We don't have near as many venues, but we have a venue here and there's street parking and they don't have much room inside. So what they've done is they blocked off the parking spots in front of the place, put up the steel barricades around it and put the band literally in the street. And they make it work, put up an umbrella, put them in the street. We're trying to crawl out of it, you know. We're trying to figure a way out.
Because I know Mississippi, particularly now, is really suffering.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, it's tough over here. I think just from the people I know, that there's been some attitudes that have changed here in the last, just really in the last week. I've had some people saying, hey, you know what, I need to get that shot. Now, Mississippi is a little different because it's a lot more spaced out than most places. You know, the whole state, I think the population for the whole state's only like 3 million. So I think there was a thought for a long time here that it didn't get hit as bad because the towns are small and people were not packed up all upon each other. So for a long time, I think Mississippi did okay. But then when this Delta thing came out, and not the Delta that we're talking.
Not the music Delta.
Not the good music Delta. This bad Delta that come through, that's kind of changed a lot. And so I watched my county numbers a lot. And I was watching it and I was like, okay, we're not doing bad. 4, 5, 6, 4, 5, 6. And then all of a sudden, 85. 95, 100. So the attitudes, I think, have changed here because we don't not having the success that we've had earlier on. So I have gotten mine.
Yeah, we got ours as soon as we could.
Yeah.
Savannah is also being hit again. Jazz Festival, we're planning to return to Forsyth Park this year, but because of the rise of incidents of COVID in the city, the mayor has temporarily stopped all large gatherings. I mean, he really made a lot of people mad, but saved a lot of people's lives back in 2020 when he stopped St. Patrick's Day events. And again, this year, St. Patrick's Day did not occur. Right. Again, because of the fact that the fear of large crowds again. Then it sort of opened as the summer went through with some more larger events. But now he's, you know, put the damper on larger events, at least through September. And there's talk about October as well, just depending on how the numbers go, I guess. So the Savannah Jazz Festival, which was back in Forsyth Park again, has moved to Savannah Station, an indoor, smaller venue. But they're going to go back to what they did last year, and that was stream it.
Right. We just have to come up with ways to try to hold on until we get through this.
Of course, you're not a full-time musician, and so that's some help.
Yeah. I know a couple full-timers out there, and a few of them are managing, but a lot of them are really struggling. So, yeah, thankfully, you know, I think about music all day and practice really hard and stuff like that, but I'm not worried about it on the financial end.
Yeah.
This is WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings Community Radio with Global Soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
The Historic Savannah Foundation Lecture Series will feature Davenport House Museum Executive Director Danielle Hodes on Thursday, August 21st at 6 p.m. at the Historic Savannah Foundation Headquarters, 321 East York Street. Members may RSVP at kgram@myhsf.org, and non-members can purchase tickets by visiting myhsf.org/events/lecture-series. The first Friday for Folk Music Performance on Friday, September 5th, starting at 7:30 p.m., features two sets with award-winning blues artist Henry T. Jones from Tupelo, Mississippi. His original, authentic, and compelling performances of the blues reach deep into your soul. The concert is at the First Presbyterian Church, Stewart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue, Savannah. More information can be found at savannahfolk.org. Evening Eclectic features weekly conversations with and the music of national and international musicians from a wide range of musical genres. Join me, Dave Lake, your Evening Eclectic host, and these musical guests each week on Sunday nights from 8 until 10 p.m. on WRUU. Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with Henry Jones about his life, his music, and his performance coming up in 2 weeks from Friday at the First Friday for Folk Music Concert on Friday, September 5th at the First Presbyterian Church, Stewart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue, with two sets beginning at 7:30 p.m. Welcome back to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Henry Jones.
So there's a couple songs I want to play, and one of them is Mississippi Lullaby. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
So both of my parents are from Mississippi. And they, for obvious reasons, at that time, they got out of Mississippi as quickly as possible. It's very strange that I ended up back here. But so they left Mississippi, but I would come back here in the summers and stay with my cousins. And it's a lot different from Ohio. I would come here and they would just cut you loose and let you run around and do all kind of things that the kids do in the country, you know. And it was a different lifestyle. But I did not know the history of Mississippi. And I didn't ever know why my mother at 16 or 17 got out. And my father basically took any job he could get out of the state. They didn't say anything about this. They just, at that point, they just let us be kids. We're running around doing all sorts of crazy kid stuff, riding horses. And so as I got older, and then I understood some of the reasons why they left. That's why when I was thinking of the song, my memories of Mississippi are like a kid's story. They're like, this is just a great place. And it still is a great place. But I didn't know about some of the bad things because they just didn't talk about it. And that's kind of where I come up with Mississippi Lullaby.
And who's on this?
I've got Lakin and Williams singing vocals there.
Ah.
Yeah, Lakin came into the studio. I actually did that track in Augusta, Georgia. So it's Ellis Duncan on bass.
Dave Morgan playing harp.
Michelle Cotney's playing drums for me. And The engineer actually helped me out and played a few pieces. He played a lot of keyboards, and he did some extra guitars. His name is Sean Guess. You know, so it just had a great set of players to help me do that.
So let's listen to the original song, Mississippi Lullaby. And again, this is Henry Jones, who is my guest tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, along with his band.
Shotgun in the corner, like a stuffed bobcat. She told me he could blink. I stayed up all night, worried about that. Such a long day for a little boy's arm. Trying to do some chores on a working man's farm.
So you've been listening to Henry Jones along with his band perform the original song, Mississippi Lullaby. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, we have blues guitarist Henry Jones. Another original song that we have is called This World.
Actually, I wrote that before COVID, but it kind of fits really the whole COVID thing because it was just like, you just get a little weary and you're just kind of a little beat down. I mean, as it relates to COVID, you're like, hey, you know, goodness gracious, this is going to wear me out. I'm just tired. I'm tired of dealing with this. I don't know if maybe I don't need much more explanation than that.
And who's on this?
Michelle Cotney's playing the drums.
Dave Morgan playing harp.
And Duncan's on the bass. And myself is on guitar. And Lakin is doing the backup vocals there. And Lakin, man, let me tell you, she is just like something else. I had never heard her. I heard people around Savannah talk about her. I'd never heard her. And I looked her up online. I was like, oh, man, I got to get this lady to sing with me. So I sent her a tape. She pulled it up on her phone and drove over there. This is way up there in Augusta. She drives up there. She listens on her phone with her friend. She comes in there. They've dropped the mic down, put headphones on her, and she just nails it. I love her, man. She's so cool. Yeah, she can hear what I was wanting. She just walks in the room. Okay, here's this, and boom. So very cool.
Yeah, really terrific musician.
Yes.
So let's listen to the original song, This World. And this is Henry Jones along with his band.
This world is gonna wear me. This world is gonna wear me.
We've been listening to the original song, This World, and this is Henry Jones along with his band.
That's another good thing about Savannah. I've had a lot of good players that I've had a chance to play with around there. You have like a couple different bass players that know your material. You have a couple different drummers that know what you're doing, and you, hey, are you available such and such a date? You get a couple different people because people are playing multiple venues. But a lot of places, you don't have two or three different people you can call. You got a drummer, and if he can't make it, that's it.
You're out of luck.
You're out of luck. And there's a real co-op in Savannah as far as, like, a lot of people know each other, and they pass each other's names around. In fact, I had a gig once there, and the drummer couldn't make it. He referred me to other drummers. He's like, oh, I can't catch it, but hey, this other guy is really good. Why don't you call him? And sure enough, you know, we all kind of network with each other and get you a guy or a gal that can get it done. Because that's how I met Rochelle. Rochelle was referred to me. I needed somebody to sit in and was lucky enough to get her.
Now, your performance coming up this Friday is going to be as part of the First Friday for Folk Music. And this is, again, Friday, September 3rd at 7:30 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church. This will be a solo gig.
Yes. Yes. I do have a guy named Bobby Hansen on harp. He's going to sit in. He's going to do some things with me. But, yeah, primarily it's a solo gig. It's almost like you see them old footage of, like, the dude walking through the desert and his clothes are all tattered, and all of a sudden he comes up on some water. He jumps on the water, and that's basically how the gig life is right now, you know.
Yeah.
Been walking through this desert here and got this opportunity to play a really good venue with some really cool folks. So it's like I'm parched right now. So.
And so it looks like you'll do a set, and then you're going to be joined by Bobby Hansen.
Yeah.
And for those who aren't familiar with the lingo, harp is a harmonica.
Yeah.
So don't expect this big string thing to show up. My understanding is, have you played with him before?
I have never met him before. We are doing the email thing, which is, as I've done this before with other folks, and I played with so many different people over the years. I mean, Houston, Texas, Charlotte, North Carolina, Jacksonville, Florida, Tupelo, Mississippi, Decatur, Alabama. I played with all these different places and people, and I think you listen to them play, and then you can adjust things a little bit to kind of get them in the mix. So I've heard him play. He sent me some stuff that he does, and I kind of hear, okay, I kind of know where he's at. And then so on a technical level, when I'm playing by myself, I try to fill in a lot of the space. So if I'm coming through the song and I'll add extra parts, it's just me. But if I'm playing with somebody else, then I'm going to leave some space for that person. And so the trick is to let him know where I'm leaving him spots, to have his ear kind of pick up on where it's at and to understand, okay, you know, coming up at this next break, I'm not playing fills in this next break. I'm not going to add parts in this next break. I'm going to leave my part blank so that you can jump in here and do what you need to do. And then also what I'll do is I'll simplify what I'm playing so that we don't have any note clashing. So while I may even go into where instead of playing the full chord, I may just mute it and just play the top part of the chord. So that gives him a bigger palette to work with. And then when we go back into the song, when he's finishing up, then I'll stretch the chords back out, make them more colorful. And then he doesn't have to worry about banging in the different odd notes. So yeah, there's just a few of the techniques I'll do when I'm playing with other folks.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, we have blues guitarist Henry Jones. Are there certain songs that you're going to be playing in the first half of the show and then stuff that you're reserving for the second half that meets the harp a lot better, or pretty much it's similar songs in both sets?
They'll be similar in both sets. I'm trying to work that out in my head right now because I just have a certain way I like to do the set. And so songs that would be really good for him might be like songs 3, 7, 11, and 12. And so now I've actually got to figure that out this week as far as how I'm going to group the material together. Because typically when I'm playing by myself, I have a certain flow that I think works. But now I need to chop them up a little bit differently to give him some space. So that's this week's kind of thought process.
So tell me, how do you set up a set? What goes through your mind?
Over the years, people have told me different things, and I think that to be true. When, if you're in a band and people are expecting a little bit more out of a band, so I think with a band, you need to come out hot. I mean, you need to flat out swing like you're trying to knock them out on your first song. Provided you trust the sound man and the sound man's right. Now, if you're playing a venue and you're not 100% sure on the sound, then you go with a decent song first, and then your second song, hopefully your sound's all dialed in, and then you go for the knockout and try to grab your crowd right then and there. While you're playing by yourself, they need to warm up to you a little bit. So you typically, you're like, okay, let me just kind of play something simple to kind of grab their attention. And just to kind of get them used to, okay, there's somebody up here playing. Now, each gig is different. If you're playing a coffee shop, you approach it one way. For this particular gig, people I know came to see music. They're not just hanging out getting a latte or something. They actually came to see music. So I'm probably going to come at them with straightforward and not try to build the set up.
And what kind of tunes fall into that category of just coming at them straightforward?
Well, this, I'm primarily going to be playing originals on this one. I might open up with This World, straight, more up-tempo, straight at folks. I may do that. If I'm playing a coffee shop, another thing you do is the amount of conversation back and forth with the crowd. Now, I would see a lot of the blues guys, like I mentioned before, like Bobby Blue Bland. He's talking to the crowd back and forth, and there's a rapport between him and the crowd. And that was something that you take what they'll give you. So if you pick it up that the room is into that, and if you feel like they're into that, then you go ahead and roll with that a little bit. That's always a lot of fun. But so since I know that the people there are coming just to hear music, I'm going to test them and see how much back and forth I can push with them.
And are you going to intermix some standards in with your originals?
I may do a few different standards. I will probably do a few Robert Johnson tunes. There's some old pop staples from the Staple Singers. I may do a couple pop staples things. That's pretty much it. I'm probably going to do more of the original stuff, but I'll definitely do some Robert Johnson.
Well, as you indicated, this is really more of a listening room environment.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're here for the music.
Exactly, yeah. And I appreciate these folks, man.
And I should have mentioned, that was then, this is now. This was a show that you had on WRUU back a few years ago, where you compared music, 40s, 50s, 60s sort of music, with the music that was being played today.
Right.
Which was a very interesting concept. How did you come up with that concept?
Because I would hear a newer artist do something that would remind me of an older song. My kids would play things for me. We always have text things going back and forth, and they would text me, "Song, Dad, you need to hear this." And I think one of them might have been Leon Bridges. So at one point, my son in Texas plays bass, and he was playing with Leon Bridges. And this was early on before he kind of blew up, and he would text me, "So, oh, wow, this is great." And to me, it sounded just like something out of Stax label circa 1967 or something. And it was great. I loved it. And so that's where a lot of the ideas from the show came, was people would turn me on to things, and it would remind me of something from, wow, you know, that reminds me of this tune from the 50s or...
That was then, this is now, was a must listen on Friday afternoons.
Man, I had so much fun doing that. I mean, it was just so nice. And I would get some nice feedback later. I would have people you know, oh, wow, I didn't know who this artist was, and you turned me on to him. And a lot of people were, hey, I didn't know I was going to like that. And then I had other people that would give me ideas for shows. People were sending me things. Brandon Coleman was a guy that I'd hit my email box. Brandon would fill it up with, hey, you need to hear this. And so, yeah, it was kind of cool. I miss it.
So do you think it was because you were a musician that you heard these similarities?
I think so. I do. I think so, because I think I was trying to learn a lot of songs. And in the process of learning the songs, I think I was hearing the structure of them and hearing what was making them work. And I think that was catching my ear on some other things. And then at the end of the day, I want to promote what I think is a good tune. You know, if I think something is a really good tune, I don't want it to be thrown out based on what decade it came from. If something's just a really, really good tune, you know, it could be from 1930 or it could have came out in 1990. You know, I just really want to push the idea of if it's a great tune, it just should be heard. So, yeah, it was just all about trying to promote the best tunes, you know, that I could find.
Yeah.
Not limit them to a decade or a style. How's the radio station going?
The station is surviving. It was really interesting. Right before the pandemic, for completely different reasons, we developed a new server system in the station. When COVID came up, we realized that we could partition off a section of the server that we could give hosts access to. And so if they were uncomfortable coming in to do their show from the station, they could pre-record their show at home and load it up onto the server. So that's how we set up a lot of shows. And a lot of shows are continuing that way. Again, because this thing isn't over yet. I was thinking people would start coming back into the studio. So we're about half and half. About half of the hosts decided to continue their shows in the studio because that's the way they like to do them.
Right.
And about half the hosts have decided to do pre-record at home.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have been talking with Henry Jones about his life, his music, and his performance coming up in 2 weeks from Friday at the First Friday for Folk Music concert on Friday, September 5th at the First Presbyterian Church, Stuart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue, with two sets beginning at 7:30 p.m. And I want to thank you so much for joining me again on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Henry Jones.
Hey, well, Dave, I appreciate you having me on. It's been a blast chatting with you.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.